It's only coming back at around 1,000 or 2,000 bits per second, not even bytes per second, but only bits per second. So 1 or 2 kilobits per second at that distance. When it was close in by Jupiter and gave us pictures near Jupiter, it was around 35 kilobits per second. And now it's further out, further you go, that number drops off significantly. It comes down to around 1 or 2. Depending on how many traveling wave tubes they use. They have two traveling wave tubes on board, and they can run two at the same time, depending on the power output from the RTG. No batteries on board this thing. It's all run off the RTG. Radioisotope thermoelectric generators. They have a plutonium-238 in there, and that's what drives this thing, similar to what they do with the Voyager spacecraft, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. Also run on the RTGs. And from now on in, it's going to take, 20 months to get all this information out at 1,000 bits per second. It would take less time, but it's all going to the Deep Space Network. Network deals with around 16 missions that are existing right now that they look at, so they have to do time sharing with Deep Space Network. So 20 months later, they'll eventually have all the information that they need. And then once what happens after that, they have a very good spacecraft. There's plenty of fuel on board and plenty of power with the RTGs. So right now, Alan Stern, who's a principal investigator for New Horizons, is now looking to find another Kuiper Belt object. He's looking to try to find one before it actually leaves the Kuiper Belt. I figure they got around 10 years before that happens. I'd like to find at least one more before that horizon, you know, leaves that area. Traveling around 34,000 miles an hour, I think. So it's, you know, when they looked at that particular Kuiper Belt object on January 1st, by the time they were looking at the data, this thing was, you know, almost a million miles fast. So that's how fast it's moving. And they did the next possible flyby of another object, probably another year or two from now. They need to find it now early on so that they can make the course correction. So that's the story with New Horizon. That's the main topic. And then there's another topic that, like Dick said, I'd like to just talk about what China is doing with their mission to the moon. But before I do that, any questions on New Horizon? This is WS2N for the space portion of the Techman. Okay, I guess not. Now, while we're doing this, this mission and other deep space missions, we have OSIRIS-REx, which just went into orbit around Bennu. Bennu is not 20 miles big, but like 300 miles wide. It's the smallest mass of any object that we've managed to go into orbit. OSIRIS-REx made it there about a month and a half ago, and since then it's slowly maneuvering itself, getting to orbit around Bennu. Bennu is the name of the asteroid. That's a near Earth to us asteroid, so it's actually in a closer orbit than Mars. And the goal of OSIRIS-REx now, not only to orbit this thing right now, it's down to about a mile above it, but it's eventually going to get closer and closer, and they're going to figure out like every centimeter, square centimeter of this thing before they make the biggest move, which is going to go down, and it's got this arm that's going to come out from OSIRIS-REx, and it's going to touch the asteroid, and it's got what they call the tag unit on it. About the size of a frisbee. It's going to touch the asteroid and it's going to shoot nitrogen through sports and then the regular stuff that's on the surface of the new will get sucked into Osiris Rex. From there, his arm will put it into a capsule that's got a heat shield on it.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
And land in the Utah desert. From there, the scientists will get this thing and the turn capsule and bring it back to their lab to figure out what the new was made out of. So that's the ultimate goal of Osiris Rex. Like I said, that we're doing deep space missions for China. Not sleeping, I'll tell you that. They launched a spacecraft to the moon with a lander on board and a rover on board as well. Instead of landing on the moon like the side that we see, they decided let's land on the far side of the moon. So earlier this year they launched another satellite before another spacecraft before this one. And the goal of this one was to act as a repeater. They set it around 40,000 kilometers behind the moon, just sitting there, not really orbiting the moon, just sitting out there. They call it a halo orbit. And just waiting for this lander to come. So sure enough, they sent this lander up on and spacecraft went into orbit at the end of December, and on January 2nd, it fired its retro rockets and eventually went down with four legs, weighs as much as a small car, probably around 3,000-4,000 pounds, and landed on the far side of the moon. The reason it could do that is because it has that satellite sitting out there. If you're on the far side of the moon, signals will never get through the moon get back to what China considers their deep space network, which has nothing to do with ours. They have their own antennas placed in parts of the world. And it turned out it was a successful landing. On board this lander, they have a rover. Now, if this sounds all familiar, they did this back in 2013, but they did it on the near side of the moon. They had a rover as well. It's called U2. Y-U-T-U. The first one was U-2-1, this is U-2-2. And the rover left the lander, and there's pictures of it on the internet, and you can see this thing as it drove away. So they're doing pretty good. Successful launch, they're not going to stop there. By the way, this lander that landed there, going to be able to land last through any of the nights, the two week nights that they have. The rover itself has solar panels to keep it running. By the way, they think it's going to survive a couple of lunar nights, and they think the solar panels are going to come back on and charge the batteries, and that rover's going to keep on going. That really didn't work out too good the first time. They did get some kind of a signal back, but all intents and purposes, it was dead in the water after one lunar night. This one's supposed to be a little bit more beefed up. But the lander itself that landed there has an RTG on board, a radioisotope turbo electric generator to keep that running. So that's going to run through the day and night. And that's got different experiments on board. On that lander, they want to test out radio astronomy on board. They want to see, they're going to point it out to the sky and see what they see without the interference from Earth. It's a great place to have any kind of radio astronomy on a dark side of the moon. And they also have little things on board, little biological things. Want to see if they can grow. They have to have a tray, and they're going to direct the sunlight to this tray. All kinds of, there's a little water inside this thing. Staying warm around 86 degrees Fahrenheit because they have the RTG there, and the RTG not only produces electricity, it produces heat. So They want to see whatever they sent up is going to grow. So they're doing pretty good. And then next, we'll see about a year from now, they plan on sending another lander up to climb on the near side of the moon. And probably with another rover. And their goal is, on that mission, is to collect a sample, bring it back to the lander. And they have a rocket on board that, and it'll blast off from the moon and do a sample return mission. That's 1 year from now. So, this is called Chang 4. The next one's going to be called Chang 5. So that's what they're up to. Not to be left behind, believe it or not, Israel has a launch coming up in February. Yeah, I believe the end of February. I'll have to check. They're gonna hitchhike a ride on a Falcon 9 rocket. Falcon 9 is gonna be putting up geosynchronous communication satellite for Indonesia. So they're gonna piggyback a ride with Space L. They call it Space L. It's called Space IL, Lunar Lander. So it is a lunar lander. It's gonna separate from the main spacecraft after they put the communication satellite into orbit. It's got a little kick motor on there, and it's gonna push itself all the way to the moon. That engine is going to land on them. And this was all derived from years ago. Google had a Google Prize, you know, $20 million for anybody that could land on the moon. Any independent company that could land on the moon, take high resolution pictures, transmit it back to Earth, and then take off again from that location and fly to a different location, at least 500 meters away. Land 500 meters away, and then take more high definition pictures and send them back to Earth. If you did that, you would get your $20 million, or whatever it was, from Google. But it took so many years for everybody to develop this stuff that the Google time limit ran out. So that was it. They weren't going to pay anybody anything, but a lot of these companies were in development of this, and they weren't going to stop. And Israel is one of the people that developed a lunar lander that had that capability. Sure enough, they're going to get a ride on a Falcon 9, about a month or so, through the moon. So that I'm going to look forward to see how Israel makes out. And not to be undone or outdone is India. Also, the end of our February, possibly early March. They have their own launch vehicles. They don't need to hitch a ride on anything. They're going to launch on a geosynchronous launch vehicle, GSLV. That's a heavy launch vehicle. That's what they call it. And they have their own lunar lander and lunar rover. So they're going to do it. And they're going to launch it. They're going to go to around 70 degrees south latitude on the moon. They're going to land and have their rover leave the lander and go up and do their thing. So if they do it, that will be the U.S. has done it with a rover. We had like three rovers go up there. We had people on them. Russia did it back in the 70s. They had their lunar vehicle, lunar cart, I think they call it, and then quite a few missions they did with that, and eventually they had a sample return mission. So they did that, and now China wants to do a sample return mission. That's three countries, and now Israel will have a rover, that's four, and now India. So you'll have five countries total that have accomplished quite a task of getting to the moon and doing something probably within another month or so, a couple of months. That's the deal with China. Any questions, comments about the China mission? This is WS2N.
KD2PPF. Yeah, we did the first burnouts. We actually threw dust with our with our rover. So that was pretty cool.
82 PB, yeah. Very good. I've got your name, but that was cool.
Paul, how is that spacecraft on the backside of the moon being powered? Is that an RTG?
Yes, I missed that. KD2PB. Was it PFF? Is that name? Go ahead. Okay, a little noise in the signal, but I think it was Matt. Very good. Yeah, they shot up a lot of dust when they did those three missions. Apollo 15, 16, and 17 had rovers. The rovers are still sitting up there. All they need is a couple of batteries. And very good. And Dick, you said something. I'm sorry. What was that?
Yeah, the Chinese spacecraft on the backside of the moon, is it powered by an RTG?
Yes, well, the lander is the radioisotope thermoelectric generator, plutonium-238, and yes, it is, and so that will be able to run quite a while, go for decades, those things, as you know. So the rover itself, no, the rover has solar panels on it.
Now, there is a non-rover, a fixed craft on the moon. The moon goes to some crazy number like 250 degrees Fahrenheit positive at high noon, and something like minus 150 degrees, I said Fahrenheit, I meant centigrade, minus 150 degrees centigrade at night. The way the thermoelectric generator works is that the plutonium-238 is giving off heat. That goes through thermo junctions that then go into a heat shield, a heat radiator, and the difference in those temperatures is which generates the voltage. But if that heat radiator has to suffer that extreme temperature, I'd be amazed if they get the same amount of electrical power out of that RTG when you compare lunar high noon to lunar midnight. Okay, Paul, K2RIW, that's a difficult requirement.
Yeah, well, I guess like the RTGs that are going through deep space, you know, we've used them probably on a dozen missions. They have the same problems. Don't know if China put louvers on theirs. You know, they give off heat. First of all, they're surrounded with I think it's iridium. Surrounds the pellets, plutonium-238 pellets, and then around that they have these blankets, carbon type of blankets, and from there they'll heat tubes will go out to different parts, you know, to maybe a web or a warm electronic box, you know, and they'll keep the electronics warm and all that. And not like on New Horizons, for instance, they were near Earth at some point. It would be too much heat, so they had louvers that opened up that actually released a lot of the heat from the plutonium, and then they closed it as they went further out. So they might have something like that.
In the case of an RTG on something like Voyager, going into deep space where it's cold, you've got a hot side with the plutonium-238, and the heat sink gets colder and colder at time. That means the temperature difference across the thermal couples is greater and greater, and they generate more voltage. That's the right direction. But on the moon, a day is 28 days long. Daylight is 14 days, and nighttime is 14 days. High noon on the Earth lasts for an hour. High noon on the moon lasts for almost a whole day. So you've got a whole day at some ridiculously high temperature. I'm amazed that RTG can behave correctly during that high noon. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I think on our, not Apollo 11, but Apollo 12 and the other ones after that, well, not 13, of course, but they had RTGs for the science packages that they left on the moon, keep those things going. Name went for years, right? Yeah, many, many years. But they survived all those nights. I guess they must have it figured out pretty good. The early science packages ran on solar panels. Then after that, they used the RTGs on board the Apollo spacecraft. I don't think it's going to be a problem. Well, one thing we know is solar panels aren't going to work. Not for long anyway. They need well, they beefed up this one. They said this one's going to work better than the last one. See what happens with that. Back to you, Jay.
And the science packages that the Apollo astronauts left on the moon were called ALSEP, A-L-S-E-P, Apollo Lunar Surface Experimental Package. And I'm not sure, but I think you're telling me that they also ran on a radioactive thermal generator. And they transmitted their data back down at S-band, something like 2.4 gigs. And when I was listening to the astronaut and I was using this synthesized receiver, we did tune over to the ALSEP packages and listen to those, Paul, listen to their downlink. So I think you're saying they were fed with RTGs, is that true? K2LIW?
Yes, all the later ones, but not 11. We started out with 12. So that's how that worked. So that was pretty good. You know, I mean, you know, I think that's going to be the wave of the future. They have a couple of other things that they're working on to create more power for future missions. I think this one's going to survive. I think you're going to be surprised. They're going to be doing astronomy for a long time on that dark side of the moon. Dark side of the moon, yeah. Far side of the moon. As long as that satellite stays operational and they have sitting out there 40,000 kilometers away, they're going to do a lot of astronomy, collect the data, send it up to that satellite. The link between the rover and the lander is all UHF, and then the link between the lander and the satellites are X-band. Same thing for going back to Earth, X-band.
Now that satellite of theirs is at a Lagrange point. It's amazing that you've got Lagrange points between Earth and Moon. You also have Lagrange points between the Earth and the Sun. The infrared telescope, the James Webb telescope, is going to be a million miles away from the Earth on the backside of the Moon at the Sun-Earth Lagrange point. But this Chinese satellite is at the Earth-Moon Lagrange point. And I think it's one of those waving websites. In other words, it's in a gentle loop out there, and that loop is such that it always goes around the perimeter of the moon. It always has direct sight of the Earth. The moon never creates a shadow between Earth and moon onto that satellite. Therefore, that satellite that continuously see the lander can continuously be acting as a repeater to take the lander signal up to the satellite, send it back to Earth in real time. They don't have to wait for the orbit to be in the right place. That's pretty crafty. And I think the Chinese are about to do a lunar soil recovery mission. Is that true, Paul? You may have already said that. K2IW?
Yes, I mentioned that before, that Chang 5, that would be December of 2019, maybe January of next year. They definitely plan on doing that. And the satellite that's in the halo orbit now, or Lagrange Point 2, they do use a little fuel for that. They actually use less fuel. James Webb is going to use less fuel out. Launch Point 2, you know, Sun, Earth, and then James Webb a million miles out. They're going to use actually less than this satellite that China put up there. So it's, I don't know how long that satellite's going to last. That's what I'm saying. As long as that thing lasts, they'll have astronomy coming back. I guess they could always send another satellite up there. Eventually, that's what we plan on doing as well. Plan on eventually having a gateway manned space station up there. It's called the Gateway. And that would be sent to the same location. Just sit there and look back down on the moon. Let me drop it. Well, that's the plan anyway for now. As politics change from one group to another, you know, you exchange off. Big push was from Mars. Now we're going back to the moon. Who knows? We might be head back to Mars in a couple more years if the administration changes. I just wanted to do both. This way, there's no problem. We'll do the moon and Mars. Talking about that, SpaceX is coming along with their vehicle that they plan on eventually sending to Mars called Starship. They're building it down in Texas, and they plan on launching it from their new launch complex that they're building near the Mexican-Texas border. It's a place called Boca Chica, Texas. It's like a couple of miles away from the border. Give you an idea, it's just south of Brownsville, Texas. And for years they've been preparing the land and getting ready to construct their launch facility. But now they actually have hardware for what they call the Starship. Their first goal is, you got to understand what the Starship is first. Starship is, makes the Falcon 9 look like a toy, probably about as big as the Saturn V rocket. Saturn V rocket diameter was around 33 feet. This one's around 30 feet diameter. Plan on having new Raptor engines on the launch. I believe they're going to probably use 9 of them as well, just like Falcon 9. And then, you know, they plan on using this to launch, I mean, their ultimate goal is to launch like 40 people at a time to go to Mars. In between that time, they plan on using it to also go to the moon. But the goal is to successfully get one of these things in the air. Building one now is actually out of stainless steel. I was kind of surprised to see that instead of the carbon based epoxy system that they've been using. Actually building out of stainless steel. They mounted 3 Raptor engines on. The Raptor engines are new engines. Falcon 9 uses an engine called the Merlin. Merlin D. And it's roughly the 4th iteration of the Merlin engine. Each time they come out with another Merlin engine, it's powerful. This one's going to be like, you know, 4 times more powerful than the existing engine. Ultimately, with all the engines firing, they plan on getting over 10 million pounds of thrust out of this thing. But in the meantime, in the short term, we're talking about maybe April or May, they plan on testing this vehicle as the shortened version. The diameter is the same of what the ultimate Starship is going to be, 30 feet. They have the leg, the engine installed. They're going to put this cone piece on top, which will duplicate the living area, equivalent of be able to have 40 people living there on top. You know, load it up with liquid methane and liquid oxygen instead of just kerosene like they normally use now. It's going to be a liquid methane powered vehicle. So they plan on launching this thing from Boca Chica launch facility. They're building a private launch facility instead of using Cape Canaveral or Cape Kennedy. Launch Complex 39A, which they're using now, and Launch Complex 39B. They plan on using their own launch complex. Launch it up, and they want to go up around 500 meters, and then bring it back down and land where it took off. And they want to practice doing this, and eventually work their way up to 5,000 meters, which is like, you know, 3 miles high, and do the same thing, and eventually come back and land in the same place. They filed for an okay with the federal government, with the FAA. They received an okay for this spring. So we'll see how this works out, and this is going to be their first attempt to the beginning of actually creating their Starship, which is really incredible. It's all by SpaceX. Not to be outdone, though, that's going to sometime before that happens in April. If you wait until the end of this month, they will be launching the Dragon version, the Dragon crew version from Launch Complex 9A. Right now they have Launch Complex in Florida, 39A, and they have Launch Complex 40. Right now, if you launch a vehicle to the International Space Station, they've been using both pads, actually, or you put a satellite into orbit like you're going to be doing up in Indonesia to geosynchronous orbit. They can use these launch pads. The Launch Complex 39A is being designed to launch people. So that's why if you look at any pictures of Launch Complex 39A, you'll see this 80-foot arm that's be able to swing out and connect to the top of the rocket. And this arm is going to be the access for a crew. So that's all installed, probably by the end of this month. By the end of this demo crew vehicle. As if there was a crew, but there's not going to be a crew on board. They're going to launch it up to the International Space Station. But I'm almost ready to do it. I mean, if you look at the vehicle, everything's done in Florida. If you look at the what they call the trunk, you have the top part, that's where the crew would be. You'd be able to carry up to four people. And then the bottom part of it, which looks a little larger than the crew vehicle itself, they call that the trunk. And that's the section that's usually inside. They have satellites that the robotic arm can take out and put on the space station or something like that. But in this case, it's going to be empty. But the outside of it is completely coated with solar cells. If you look at all the cargo versions of the Dragon, it has these wings that pop out, you know, four panels on one side, four panels on the starboard side. After launch, they pop out, and that's how they get their power from the sun. The crew version doesn't have that. The crew version does not have panels that stick out. The whole body of the trunk is covered with solar panels, solar cells. So that's the big difference when you look at it. And we'll see how they do. They plan on launching up, docking with the space station. I mean, not docking, not berthing. It's going to be all autonomous. No crew, nobody, but it's going to dock all by itself. Stay there a couple of weeks and actually unload some cargo that they'll bring up with the crew. Not much, but then it's going to undock by itself, come back and heat shield, parachute, and eventually land in the Pacific Ocean, just the way the cargo version does. That's pretty interesting. And if all goes well, my guess is by, say, June, the earliest maybe June, they plan on launching a crew up. SpaceX plans on launching two people from Launch Complex 39A in Florida on the first crew mission this year. And not to be outdone, Boeing basically doing the same thing. They'll eventually have a drive one in front as well with their Starliner, they call it Starliner, and that's going to go do the same thing, dock with the International Space Station. And come back. The difference is that won't land in the water. That's going to land on land in the desert. It's got some big airbags that pop out and protect the crew. Also, the crew of four will be on the Starline of Boeing vehicle. And then once that's successful, a couple of months after that, you know, figure August, September or something, and they'll launch their own crew. When they launch their crew, they're going to launch three people in their crew version. So that's pretty interesting. They're building three of them right now in Florida. You know, three Boeing Starliners. And Dragon has a couple of them that they're building as well, the crew version of the Dragon. So that's the story. Any comments or questions? It's part of the net. This is WS2N. We got your call letters at the end, and a little noise in the beginning, so I couldn't hear what you said. Try again.
Sorry, I was trying to change location. Yeah, it's a very busy, big flutter, training, a lot of exercises in Boca Chica. Very, very noisy place, but great location for a launch.
Yeah, QSO, you're right about that. I mean, for years now, they've been bringing in dirt and everything from somewhere else, trying to, you know, pound the dirt down and all kinds of rock and whatever they're doing. They're trying to build a proper base for the launch complex. And it's supposed to be powered by solar panels. You know, Elon Musk owns a company called Solar City. He was going to put acres and acres of solar panels out there. I don't know if that's still on the drawing board. But, yeah, very close to the border. So, actually, one thing he has to concern was if they, well, this is never going to happen, but if they ever decided to build this wall, Great Wall of China, Great Wall of America from sea to shining sea, they would actually be taking land away from Elon Musk. I don't think he's going to stand for that. But yeah, Boca Chica, I've read quite a bit about it. They have pictures of it on the internet, what he's doing. He's got these gigantic antennas down there, antennas that he got from NASA, and NASA's not using it anymore. He's big parabolic 80-foot antennas, tracking and all. So, he's quite a character. Any other comments?
WA2MHL. Just curious, what could be the ROI or return on investment for India, say, or Israel?
I guess, you know, I mean, the ultimate goal is, you know, for all these companies that were doing this, there were like, I don't know, 10 or 12 companies that were doing this at one time. We still have a couple here that are planning to do it. Guy Richardson, I believe he owns Moon Express. I think it is. He has a plan of doing this probably within a year or so as well. He's going to get a ride. What's going to get a ride on from Elon Musk? I'm not sure if that's still on, if he went to somebody else. Well, we'll look into it as that comes up. But yeah, their goal, of course, is to send bigger units up. Moon Express has, I've seen their plans for their bigger units, and you know, they want to be able to supply material or stuff to future astronauts, and maybe do mining on the moon or whatever they plan on doing. These are all long-term goals, but you know, they got to start with something. That's what they're starting with. India's doing it. India plans on having a manned mission. They plan on going to the moon. China definitely plans on going to the moon. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do that by the early 2030s. So they need this stuff. Amazon.com, owned by Jeff Bezos, owns Blue Origin. Blue Origin is a space company building their own rockets. They have their own Launch Complex 36 in Florida. They're going full blast. Well, they're building a vehicle, a pretty big, large vehicle that can actually land on the moon, so, you know, to supply anything that NASA puts up there or anybody else. We're going to see.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
But they're all, you know, immediate goal, I mean, financially. Right now it's going to be bragging rights and trying to get more money. If they can, you know, tell their people, this is what we're doing, maybe they're going to get more money and build these bigger rockets and bigger spacecraft. And, you know, everybody has long-term goals. This is going to take off. There's dozens of small companies that are doing suborbital flights around the world. Not only us, Spain has one. A whole bunch of them. Any other comments or questions? With 6 minutes left for the net. I guess I got covered 3 weeks ago at the launch of Unity by Richard Branson, who owns Orbital, Galactic Orbit. They have a couple companies, Orbital Galactic, and they launched their vehicle from the White Knight 2. White Knight 2 is a carrier. They have a pilot in there, and they drop an astronaut in the two astronauts in the Unity, and fires its rocket, goes to suborbital flight, and they successfully made it to space, and they plan on a couple more tests, and I would say sometime this year, probably maybe toward the end of the year, you're going to be seeing people paying $250,000 to get on this thing, you know, six at a time with two pilots, you know, pilot, co-pilot, so six people at a time, paying this kind of money to suborbital flight. I think you're going to see that, as well as Blue Origin, like I mentioned before, owned by Jeff Bezos, Amazon. He's in the process of launching New Shepard. New Shepard takes off like a rocket, you know, launch complex down in Texas, and launching probably 10 of these things so far. New Shepard's going, they go into space, they separate from the crew capsule separates from the booster. Booster comes down, lands vertically in the desert, almost right back where it started from, and the capsule comes down with the crew with the parachute. Again, it's not orbital, but they will make it into space. I think they might have at least a crew go up probably toward the end of the year, if not sooner. So that would be the New Shepard vehicle. This is WS2N. Dick, I'm going to pass it to you for the last couple of closing minutes. You are where I want to say anything. H-U-R-A-W, WS2N.
We've come to the end of another one. And my numbering system may be goofed up. I think this is 1,728. I think that was space report number 328, although you may think it's 329. Somehow I've slipped the number somewhere. And we've had science report number 57. We'll be back next week. More puzzles, more space stuff, more ham radio questions and answers. Obvious by what happened at Ham Radio University and what's been going on for 36 years on the TechNet. There's an awful lot to learn about wireless antennas and transmission lines, transmitters, receivers, propagation. Yeah. What did I say at one time? 28 or something like that, or 35 different kinds of ham radio. 73 you all. Bye-bye for now. Let's see if Roy wants to put any closing words in there. And good job tonight, Roy and Paul. AC2GS for any other comments. K2RW, to be clear but listening.
Yes, certainly. I'd love to say a few things. I want to thank everyone who participated tonight, because that was That's what makes it interesting. If you just listen to me, it's not going to be interesting at all. So thanks to everyone who participated. And if anyone has any kind of puzzles like that and wants to offer them up, once again, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. mailbag@ac2gs.com. And if you want any of the links to any of the pages, the articles, the stories, the survey of the Pew Research that tells how many countries love us and hate us, just go to roy.ac2gs.com and you can click the link for that. So thanks to Dick, thanks to Paul, and thanks to all of you guys. This is AC2GS. Going clear.
WV2GX, I'm wishing everyone a happy new year.
Same to you, and we'll be back next week. This is WS2N. Have a good night.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. At 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. At 8:30, WQVL repeater system.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Welcome to the W2VL repeater. WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. connect tonight at 8:30 W2VL repeater system. Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. W2VL repeater system.
This is VG9BG, Papa Delta 9 Bravo Golf, monitoring.
net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Mobile, I think it works. Test 1-2, WHCDL, test 1-2 on a portable radio.
KQKNB.
And warning. I know I'm listening to myself. I know it's working. How you doing?
Yeah, where are you now?
I'm in Garden City. I'm not that far from the repeater. But, my microphone for my radio in the car got damaged. So I can't use it right now. Actually, I can, but the push-to-talk switch is broken. So, I'm getting another microphone for it.
That wasn't you who died up the repeater yesterday, was it?
I didn't hear the question. What was that?
Yeah, somebody had tied up the repeater for a while yesterday. I was only kidding. I know it's not you.
No, it was not me. This is in the car, and I was not in the car much. Yesterday, I was still recovering from Saturday.
Wait, I missed the last part. Recovering from what?
From Saturday, from HRU. You know, it takes me a day to get back to normal.
No, come on. It's just another day in the world, you know? I mean, I was there at 7:30, and, you know, I did leave a little early because we were supposed to go out to dinner. Anyway, Andy, I'm definitely going to make the suggestion that we swap a little bit there and get you a 2-hour workshop, and I'll go back to 1 hour on what I do. Yeah, it could be good. I think you'll have a lot of fun doing it also.
Oh, yeah, I like, I like showing off all the stuff. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, and I need more time, but this time, you know, we'll have time to make a PowerPoint presentation, and we'll get into... We won't make it so broad. I'll just get into one piece of equipment, and we'll talk about that. You know, you gotta start at the beginning.
Yes, but you really have to give a lot of thought to what works best. And I'm telling you that in your particular area there, it's all visualization. I don't know so much about a PowerPoint. Maybe for... descriptive material, perhaps, but the tendency sometimes when people put up a PowerPoint is to read from the PowerPoint. That makes no sense. So unless it's doing something special, I'm telling you, Andy, people look at that equipment, they haven't seen it. We mention it all the time: service monitors, spectrum analyzers,